What a spot. All right, welcome back to another episode of Flip the Record. This is episode
320.
320 today? Damn. Yeah, 420. So. Episode 420. Yeah. One.
We were driving yesterday. I had to help my dad. One of our relatives was getting rid of a bunch of old tools, like a drill press, bandsaw, like really nice stuff, really heavy stuff. So I was going to help him lift it. We drove past a dispensary. And there is no joke, like 100 people waiting outside for the dispensary to open. Like they must have had some kind of crazy promo or something. But we were all, we were like, what's going on here? And then like one of us was like, oh wait, it's 420. Like,
yeah, and it's funny to me too that like in my head I'm like, well, wouldn't you get your weed for 420 on 419? But knowing stoners, they definitely didn't think that far ahead. And we're like, oh it's 420.
Yeah, true.
Oh man. But yeah, I got a few people texting me yesterday at like noon, like high as balls. And I'm like, fellas, it is noon o'clock today. Go like, I don't know. I guess it's Saturday, but like, stop, seek help. Or what's that Jordan meme? You know what I'm talking about?
Which
Jordan,
one?
I think Jordan did like a anti-drug commercial. He's like, stop.
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, it's a funny fucking meme. Anyways, I'm just playing. It's good stuff. Man, there's a few things we could get into. I guess let me get some quick stuff out of the way. I updated that playlist. You remember I told you I was making a playlist with all the songs that I thought were noteworthy from doing this?
Yeah.
I updated that playlist through Queens of the Stone Age, not including Taylor Swift.
Okay.
I have 1,300 songs plus on that playlist.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds about right. I could go check like from when we've been doing this to now. I'm sure I probably added 1,500 something like that songs.
Yeah, and I guess I was probably even being somewhat picky because like didn't add a ton of John Mayer, didn't add a ton of like Art Like at the Fray. Like I just added the songs that I thought were worth listening to again and still ended up with 13 and some change. I was like, damn. And it's interesting to think too that like a good chunk of that is songs I already knew, but I would say another at least half chunk of that is songs I'd never heard before, which is fucking cool.
That is cool.
Yeah,
I need to do a purge because like I definitely have way too many John Mayer and see their song saved where when they come on shuffle, like 9 times out of 10, maybe 95 times out of 100, I'm just like, nope, not in the mood. There are like for Seether, like there is like maybe 10 to 15, 20 songs where like I will listen to them, but I'd probably save like 60 or 70. And then like most of the time, I'm just not in the mood for it.
I should probably do that, too. I've got one big playlist that I listen to in the car that I just kind of throw on. It's got a very like amalgamated mismatch of stuff, and there are certain songs that I hear and I skip every time. Yep. And I don't know why I don't just take it off the playlist.
Yep. A lot of Kesha songs that are in the same boat. I mean, for a lot of artists that have like 100 songs plus that we've covered that have saved a lot, like there's a lot I can cleanse.
Yeah for sure. But no, it's just a cool thing. It took fucking forever because it had been a while since I had updated it. I think I had been like since maybe late last summer since I updated it. I think I spent a good hour plus just, you know, click. And Spotify doesn't have a great setup for it either. Like, it takes a while to...
Did you do it on your phone or computer?
No, on the computer.
Okay. It's easier on the computer.
Oh, it's way... Dude, on the phone, it would have taken me a day.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Fuck that. Anyways, I think that's also... I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I want to talk about this.
Oh.
A clean transition with Spotify here. We got an incredible email the other day, a couple weeks ago now. This would have been almost 3 weeks ago now.
April 1st, yeah.
It strikes me as interesting that it did come on April Fool's Day.
I didn't even think about that.
Anyways,
so
we don't really check the email much. In fact, I was shocked to find out that you did check the email.
That would be such a mean April Fool's prank.
Oh.
But they all right, we'll get to it, and then I'll say my thought first.
So... maybe about Monday, I think Monday, you texted me a picture of an email that we got on April Fool's Day. And it was from the executive producer of the Joe Rogan Experience, Jamie Vernon.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, your podcast was mentioned in an upcoming episode of the Joe Rogan Experience. We need you to give us your approval in order to use the name of your podcast in our episode. Otherwise, we'll have to cut that section. Please respond in the next 4 days, otherwise it'll be cut.
Yeah. Cut date already passed by the
time
I had
looked at this. So by the time we had seen it, it was already too late. We had missed the cut date, whatever. The email looked incredibly professional.
Yeah.
There was no telltale signs of like, ah, this is just some jackass. Like,
and my first thought was, oh, it's a scam. As soon as I reply, they're going to reply back and say, hey, just fill out this form and then, you know, send a PayPal for $100 or whatever. Like, just typical scam stuff.
Right, right.
But no, none of that. And they even have in the email, like, the signature with the phone number, address, all that good stuff. Yeah.
If it's a scam, it's a well-put-together scam.
But it's not, because they would have already they would have replied back. I've emailed twice since,
yeah.
You know.
So there is a, I'll say, somewhere in the 40 to 50% chance range that we got a genuine email from the Joe Rogan Experience saying they were talking about our podcast.
And
we missed it.
Yeah, terrible.
What a bunch of fucking scumbags we are. Unbelievable.
And I never check the email, too, because there's never anything on it.
Why would we? There's nothing to check.
Yeah.
We haven't talked to anybody. We haven't booked anybody. Like, why would we bother checking it? Unless Joe Rogan emails us.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the part I can't get over is, like, the biggest podcast in the world was talking about us. It doesn't compute.
Yeah, so I went through a couple of the guests around that time, and I went to this website. It's ran by AI, but where it has like a loose transcript of the episode, and I just did like a control F, like music and podcast, to try and find like anything. I couldn't find anything, you know? So I don't know.
It's so weird, dude. I can't imagine the context in which we come up at any point.
My guess would be if it's legit, it would be a guest that was doing a search for one of their artists that they like, and maybe they saw us come up on the podcast and we cover their artists and they gave it a listen.
Something like that, man. That's all I can think.
Yeah.
That's the only way. Which it also would be incredibly cool.
Yeah.
Well, find out that somebody that was on the Joe Rogan Experience was like, hey, I've been listening to these guys. Like, they covered, Dire Straits last week. Like, check this out.
Yeah, so if you were on the Joe Rogan podcast and you mentioned the Flip the Record podcast, please reach out to us because we'd love to talk to you.
Absolutely. Whoever you are, we would love to talk to you.
Yeah, so two more quick things off that. One, I'm going to have to – I got to give that number a call and see if I can get somebody on the phone. And
yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
See if it's legit.
And then the second thing, that would be an all-time April Fool's prank. If someone went through the trouble to really teach us a lesson.
That was a lot if that's an April Fool's prank, but – yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, that's the thing, too, because the email address was like jrebookings@gmail.com. So it's like there's no way that wouldn't have already been taken for someone to prank us.
Right, right. You know? Exactly. I went so far as to like try to Google their email to see if anybody had put up like, oh, I was emailed by Jamie once. Like, here's his email. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, what a wild, wild situation we find ourselves in. An all-time fuck-up on our part.
Yeah,
true.
All-time fumble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else here? Oh, do you want to do the Drake, Kendrick, J. Cole thing now or later?
Yeah, let's just get over with.
Yeah, let's do it now. You remember when I said J. Cole kind of looked like a bitch for not, like, swinging the hammer?
Yeah.
I was proven right immediately. Even to his own – from his own mouth, he said – that's some of the wackest shit I've ever done.
Yeah, that was the softest thing I think I've ever seen in the rap game.
It was wild. He comes out and apologizes within, what, 5 days?
Yeah.
Of releasing the track, and now the track doesn't even exist.
Yeah, he took it
off. It's been wiped, which is funny that he actually did delete later, considering the album was titled Might Delete Later.
True. Dude, yeah, I was talking to my buddy Reed, and we were both just like, not only was that the softest thing you could do, but it discredits your place in the game today and like your legacy.
Yeah, it's a fucking kill shot. Like, it's seppuku. He stabbed himself right in the heart. He had nothing. Like, again, I just go back to like, if you don't want to do it,
don't do it.
Don't do it. But if you're gonna do it, you better swing.
Yeah.
Aim for the head. And yeah. So J. Cole, not a great look.
Yeah, and he's just been getting clowned online ever since.
Oh, it's been ruthless, man. Anyways, Future top three is right up there now. then Drake put out his diss track.
Kind of fire.
Kind of fire. Not as good as Kendrick's, in my opinion.
Kendrick's just a verse.
Yeah, still. I still think Kendrick's verse on that was better than anything Drake said in his. But he had some fire lines.
I don't know. I think Drake's track was the fact that he found the dirt of like Kendrick's deal with his record label and like what percentage cut he gets. And then he used that as like drop and give me 50. Like that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is not only was Drake dissing Kendrick, but he's replying to other disses sent at Drake in that song too. Like,
yeah,
he even has a line in the song where he's like, what is this fucking 20v1? An all time line.
It was wild. It was very much Michael Scott. Boom, roasted, boom, roasted. It was like two lines, boom, roasted, two lines, boom, roasted.
Well, my favorite tweet about it was someone was like, man, like this is like the fucking Avengers. Like there's like, there's like 20 people all going at Drake.
Oh, dude, even funnier than that was Rick Ross's reply to this track, like, literally 5 seconds after it came out. Did you hear the Rick Ross?
No, I saw some synopsis saying Drake got a nose job or something stupid.
Oh,
but
dude, he had BBL Drizzy trending on Twitter for, like, a whole 2 days, just making fun of him for getting the nose job. He kept calling him white, too, which was strange.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if that's the dig you think it is.
I don't get. There's a lot of those guys that were dissing him where it's like some of their big. If you go on their Spotify, like some of their biggest tracks, guess who's doing the hook? Guess who's doing the feature? It's Drake.
Right, right.
Aston Martin Music. Like,
yeah, and so Drake was writing his diss track where he's like, Ricky, who gave you all those hits? Yeah, Drake's in a lot of that shit. It's true. Rick Ross, though, I just don't think gives a fuck. He just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, it's funny for Rick Ross to be going in on Drake. It's like, come on, man.
Stop it.
There's levels to the game.
Stop it.
There's levels. You're on a couple rungs below Drake.
I love Ricky Ross, but man, yeah. That's you're just not big enough for this ride, man.
No.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
anyways, I think Kendrick might put out one parting shot and then that'll be it, but wow, what a moment.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick kind of has to put out something because Drake did a whole track.
Kendrick's got to do something.
Yeah.
I don't know where this ends, but I think it probably ends after Kendrick replies.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, like, Drake, I still don't really listen to, like, his new stuff when it comes out. It gets popular, it was whatever. When Kendrick's new stuff comes out, I'm going to listen to it. When Cole's new, whatever the fall off comes out, I'll listen to it with a grain of salt. like it is truly changed in my eyes. Not so much Kendrick. Like, I knew Kendrick was a savage. It has reminded me that Drake's kind of a savage too, because fairly so, he was criticized for being kind of soft. And it's real easy to forget that Meek Mill diss track he did like 10 years ago now.
Man, Back to Back was fire.
Back to Back was fire.
That's and, up. That's up there for really good diss tracks. I still think, yeah, Tupac Hit Him Up is like my number one diss track. He's literally like, fuck you, I'll kill you and your family. Like, yeah, I fucked your girlfriend. Like, you're a bum. You were sleeping on the couch. Like, it's like, there was no, it was just,
untold savagery.
Yeah. I've never heard anything like that in a diss track
fuck
since.
Your bitch. Oh, man. Good stuff.
And Hit Him Up is like Tupac's number two or three songs in terms of stream. It's got like half a billy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, Biggie. All right. Unless you got anything else, let us get into Artist of the Week, All American Rejects.
Yeah, so this was your pick. Let's dive into it.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing because it's easy to kind of ascribe one-hit wonder to this band, even though they probably have four or five songs that the average 2000s kid would know. And I think in part of that is like it was a short-lived like firestorm. Like, they come out with All American Rejects' debut album. Some hits on that album for sure.
I think just one, Swing Swing.
Let me pull over here. There's one other, I think.
My Paper Heart had like 20 million streams.
Yeah, maybe not. Anyways. So yeah, you got Swing Swing, big song off that album. Move Along goes crazy. Move Along's a huge album for these guys. And then the next album, they get a hit or two off the next album. The fourth album goes completely like off in the night without a trace. Like nobody knows they have a fourth album. And then that's kind of it. Like, they've got a couple EPs, or I guess one EP they've done
singles.
Since then, with a couple singles, and like
the lead singer did a side project with a couple other guys.
Yeah, I just don't know what to make of these guys, man. Like, where,
dude, this goes back to the point I brought up with The Fray, where it's like, I don't understand. You're getting into music, And I think for The Fray was their debut album kicked ass. But and for All American Rejects, their second album, their sophomore album kicks ass. And then they make four albums in total. There's a couple hits here and there. Their last album for both bands sucks. And then they just decide we don't want to deal with the label, or we just don't want to make music anymore. So we're just going to be done.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it's also like the thing I've said again and again, where it's like, you make the hamburger well, give me the hamburger. The problem with that fourth album, and we'll get into it in more nuance, is that it strays too far off the path. In my opinion, it's not cohesive at all. It's a lot of like, it almost feels like all the rejected songs from the three previous albums were just put together and thrown out.
Yeah, I can sum up for you my All American Rejects. You can do their whole discography right now. I'll give it to you straight. First album is kind of trash. I don't like the production on it. I feel like that's where it falls flat. The vocals could, you know, it's whatever. Could be improved, but it's fine. Albums 2 and 3, great. Their sound, they've got it dialed in. Every song on both those albums is decent. Like, there's no, like, wow, I can't believe they made this. Great two albums. Fourth album, the production goes off the walls. They're trying to add in all this, like, tech and synthy stuff, and it's just, like, it's just terrible. It's a terrible album.
Yeah, and so now we've covered, I guess, a couple artists who have done this, and it's like, how does this happen? Who lets this happen? But maybe this is just the natural course of, like, somebody who's, again, I don't want to call them one-hit wonders, but they've got one great idea and nothing to back it up. Maybe that's just how this goes. It's like, all right, Swing Swing was good. Move Along, great. And then you're just kind of left in the wilderness like, well, we don't have anything else, guys. We could tour or Move Along forever, but we don't have anything else. And it just, it's a bit underwhelming, especially in a time like these guys come out in the early 2000s, in a time where pop punk is everything. Pop punk is one of the biggest genres of rock. This is the same time that Blink's coming out, Fall Out Boy's coming out, a little bit before like a My Chemical Romance, a little bit before a Panic, but like the burgeoning scene of these massive pop punk bands, and you just seem to fall flat amongst them after Move Along, in my opinion. I just like, yeah, I'll never understand why they try to make the spaghetti instead of the hamburger.
Yeah, I don't know. And I differ with you a little bit because I actually really like the third album. But
I like the third album, too. Don't get me wrong. It just feels like it tapers off quickly.
Mm. See, I think the albums 2 and 3 are really, really good. Album 2 being the best. And then 1 and 4 are just kind of like, meh.
And I think I like 1 a little bit more than you do. And yeah. Again, we've talked about this a million times. Maybe I'll just save this thought. But it's easy for that first album to have a bit of a rawness to it, let's say, for any band. Regardless, I love this sound. Like, at the highest of highs, these guys fucking rock, man. You know, tracks like Move Along, tracks like It Ends Tonight, all-time classics, man.
Oh, for sure.
Anybody who grew up in the 2000s knows all the words to all those choruses.
Yeah, 100%.
It's some of the best rock music in the 2000s, in my opinion.
Yeah, they've got like 5 songs that could all be, they're all up
there.
They're
mega hits.
Yeah.
And, you know, aside from all that, there's some really good deep cuts mixed in there too. You could make the point that they try to give you the fastball for a lot of it in the first two albums. And I guess that's fine with me. Like, yes, the first album sounds very homogenous top to bottom. The second album strays a little bit, but fairly homogenous top to bottom. I don't know, man. There's such high highs and such low lows here,
yeah.
And I don't know how else to put it. I feel like I'm just rambling now.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. All American Rejects, I believe 2002?
Yep.
These guys have been formed in like 2000, high school buddies. This is Tyson Ritter and Nick Wheeler from Stillwater, Oklahoma, home of the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Get together, form this band in high school. Kind of a mismatch of guys coming in and out of the band for the first couple of years until they really like settle on some guys after the All American Rejects debut. You get Mike Kennerty on rhythm guitar and Chris Gaylor on drums. Right off the bat on this first album, this debut, Chris Gaylor sucks on drums. He is useless. I could play the drums on most of these songs. He gets a lot better. But this first album, and I don't know if it is Chris Gaylor, but I think it's Chris Gaylor, terrible. But you hear the very essence of what All American Rejects is going to be here with songs like Swing Swing. Songs like One More Sad Song. Even the last song, which is the last song of the album. You know, very, very All American Rejects sound. I did have an issue where it struck me as a bit like derivative of Blink-182's Damn It. It's got that, like, they're doing the Tom DeLonge voice a little bit, a very kind of whiny.
Yeah.
And they're also doing, like, the up-tempo, just, like, somewhat generic kind of crunchy guitar riffs. Like, there's nothing real special to a handful of these songs musically, and it really just leans on Tyson to do his bit to really raise it to another level.
Yeah, and musically it's pretty raw, and with the vocals, like, Tyson is not all the way there yet. Like, he still has to learn the ropes.
Yeah, agreed. And I listen to some of their live stuff too. He doesn't sound good live, dude.
I believe that.
Yeah, it's not great. Anyways, it sucks when we lead into a band after talking so much shit, but here we are. All right, let's get into it. First track, My Paper Heart. This is the most, like, angsty teen pop punk I've ever heard. So, like, right on the nose, stereotypical angsty teen pop punk. Choppy, quick chords, slightly kind of buzzy, chunky sound. Very pop punk Tom DeLonge vocal. You get these, like, bell chimes in, popped in. It's a fine open in my heart, or in my feel,
yeah,
in my opinion, but it doesn't strike me as unique in any way.
Yeah, it's all right. I think this had the second most streams on the album, like I said, with like 19 million or something. The song's about a guy who broke up with his girlfriend and, you know, feels like he can't live without her, even though he doesn't want her to use him. I guess we could just do this now for like. Most of their songs is just about, like, guy-girl relationship. Like, there's not a lot of differentiation in the lyrics. And like you said earlier, when it's working and the band's firing all cylinders, you don't really care. It's good. It's catchy. You can sing along or whatever. But when it's not working, it's just like, dude, like, do you have anything else to sing about?
Yeah, please give me something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me your parents broke up or something. Just tell me something. Yeah. Next one, Your Star. I do like this one a lot. I think this is one of the better tracks on the album for sure.
I agree.
And I kind of wish this was the opener. You get that bumping piano with kind of mid-tempo, chunky chords, wacky, hollow-out keyboard. A little bit more, like, authentic All American Rejects sound on the mic instead of that, like, parody pop-punk sound.
Yeah, the vocals sound a lot truer.
Yeah. Very good, like, sing-along quality through the chorus here. Like, this is a great song.
Yeah, I'm with you. I definitely like this one a little bit more, too, than My Paper Heart. Another song about the turmoils of a relationship, but I think the songwriting's a little bit better here, and I like the vocals a lot more here. This is, like you said, one of the better ones from the album.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and the hit off the album, number three, is Swing Swing. It's the vocal work that he's finally, like, this is the masterclass for this album. It's not awesome, but it's pretty good.
It's good.
You know, again, same kind of music, sound, quick, choppy, low chords, bumping over, like, piano. And the piano actually is very prominent. You hear that, like, the thump of the keys hitting the strings. Very thumpy piano. Simple drums. This is one where, like, he's just, like, it just feels like he's banging one drum the entire time and, like, not doing much. But it's fine because the piano, I love what the piano does here, so I can get over it. And I love what he does on the mic here, like. He gets up into this higher range, but he's got this, like, low kind of, like, wobbly, fucked up range on the verses. And, again, very, very sing-along. Like, you hear all the different emotions in his voice on this song. Like, yes, is the source material, it's the same thing over and over? Yes. But I think this is their best example of, like, delivering that message.
Oh, totally. And this is, like, yeah, this is, like, the catchy chorus. You can sing along to it. And he's vocally, he's figured it out. Like, this... This is what they should be doing more of on this album than they do on the next couple albums. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's, like, it's the guitar licks in, too. Like,
yeah.
Do, 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 do. Even going into the bridge, like, the bridge on this song rocks, too, where the keyboard kind of, like bangs in on top of it, very organ sounding.
Yeah.
And opens it up a little bit, lets him kind of get some yells out. Like, there's a lot of really good things about this song.
Yeah, definitely. And when they wrote this, they kind of knew like this was going to be like the hit, so to speak. Nick Wheeler said, yeah, we knew this one was going to be special. We wrote it and then put it aside. We'd just gotten signed to Doghouse Records. We only had 5 songs to our name. We're like, all right, cool. We'll give you a 3-album deal. Finish writing the songs. Let's go make the first record. And then they knew, like, all right, swing, swing. We're going to have this, save this one for the first record. Like, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed. If only one song off this album, this one for sure.
Yeah, and this is one you'd probably recognize.
Yeah, this is one of those 4 or 5 songs that you would know.
Oh, they also said real quick, when they had first gotten signed, this is when record labels still flew bands out to L.A. and New York, and they took us to these lavish dinners, threw cash at us, we'd go to strip clubs. Quote, it was retarded. You don't get to do that anymore. Being in a new band right now has got to be the most difficult thing. There's no guitars on the radio.
The old rock is dead sentiment.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy to say when your band didn't fucking... Anyways, I don't want to get on tangent. Anyways, yeah, Swing Swing, great track. Next one, Time Stands Still. This is the very like quintessential teen coming of age song.
Yep.
Choppy acoustic chords and like a kind of more easygoing sound here. The chorus breaks out these same acoustic chords, but bangs it up onto the electric guitar, and then breaks out this like very 80s video game keyboard too. Nice vocal work here, great level changes and like even tone changes. He kind of goes
he whispers into the mic.
He whispers and he goes back and forth between the Tom DeLonge and the authentic like Tyson sound, and I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff here too. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, the song is decent. I do think it could have benefited from like a different production makeover.
100%.
But I do find the chorus catchy.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Agreed. And that's gonna be kind of an overarching theme on this album, is like it just wasn't mastered very well.
Yeah.
But
and then the other overarching theme lyrically, this was about breaking up with someone and feeling empty, which is pretty much most of the songs on
Facts.
There.
Facts. Next one, one more sad song. Not what we needed at 5, but okay. I do like this one, though. This one feels fairly Blink-182, like loud, crunchy pop punk track, like very in your face. Tuned up lead guitar licking around this very punched up, like rhythm, like heavy kind of rhythm guitar. Wholly uninspiring on the drums again. Such a nothing burger. Whoever's doing these drums sucks. But again, like the vocals here, maybe not the best work he has, but he's really, really trying. Same thing we said about Black Crowes, where like the vocals are all right, but like he's giving it all he's got. He's belting this one out, and it would be a really cool one to see live. So I do like this one.
Yeah, another song. This one's about, you know, your girlfriend cheating on you. For me, this is kind of where I was like, it feels like they're just throwing different things, different sounds at the wall, trying to find something that works. And like, I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, I hear you. All righty. Next one, Why Worry? Very like angsty West Coast California teen rock. Bits of distorted guitar mixed in under these like heavy chords and ripping vocals again, but then like they also mix in these airy lines, kind of mix it up a little bit. As far as breakup music goes, I'd say this is a pretty good song. As far as replay value goes,
yeah, another one about your relationship ending. Yeah. And at this point for me in the album, I'm just like, all right, like it's getting stale.
You've tuned out. Yeah. I think I said that something to that effect on the last album.
And even like the writing here is just like, it's so basic.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you did, but you did, but you did. Please don't go. Now my feelings for you, they're now lost because we're through anymore. I'll write you, I'll call you. I don't know. Just getting stale for me.
All-American GPT coming at you. All right. Next one, Don't Leave Me. I got, like, you know Social Distortion, right?
Yeah.
Ball and Chain. Yeah. This sounded very Social Distortion to me. Again, fairly derivative. Heavy on the punk rock here. Deep in vocals. Tempo's up. Everything feels like it's like kind of crashing together, very punk rock sound. This is the first one I noticed the drums showing some life. Like, it's not a complex drum pattern, but at least they're doing something. Yeah, nothing special.
Yeah, just another one that didn't really cut it for me. Another song, you know, you left me, I want to be with you, why'd you leave me, don't leave me, meh.
Yeah, that's, same old, same old.
And same as the next song, Too Far Gone. The relationship's over, but the burden still lasts, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, nothing crazy here for me either. I mean, it's a full kind of like pop rock ballad. This may be like the first ballad I took away from this album, but it's still very loud and, you know, pop punky. Yeah, not my favorite.
Yeah.
Next one, Drive Away. It's just so generic. It's so generic on every level.
I think this one's a little bit different, at least in how he cadences the vocals. He switches up a little bit. He sings the chorus a little bit faster.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying.
Kind of gave me like a Bowling for Soup sound a little bit.
Oh, I hear that for sure. I just, there's nothing special about the guitars, the drums, the vocals, like sonically, aside from that cadence thing you were talking about. Like, it just doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. It's still the same subject matter. It's just all right. I'm not going to come back to it. But
this is just a toss-on.
Yeah.
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 I don't like this next one either. No, Happy Endings.
I think this one is terribly produced.
Yeah, it's like a pop rock kind of love song. There's elements of like hip-hop drums and weird bell rings mixed in. You know, he rips on the chorus, but then the verses are very soft and sweet. And I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, Tim O'Hare produced this one. My note here was truly booty production. The lyrics are the same as the last nine songs, but the production's truly terrible, bad.
I think they closed the album out on a high note, the last song.
Yeah.
It's a funny bit they do here. They open the track with like scratchy radio scrolling, as if like you were just twisting a dial going around, you know. And then like it opens with a string section, very like orchestral and synthy thing that merges into a heavy rock track, determined booming vocals. Really lets it rip for a while, like the whole band just going after it. And then towards the end, slows back down into that strings thing again. You get one last like punch in the face, and then that's it.
Yeah, I think this is, again, one of the better ones, top three, top four off the album. It's not as good as, like, you know, the last love song by Dreamers, but it's good. It's, you know, with the songwriting the same, where, like, this is the last song I'm writing you.
Right, agreed. All right, we made it through that one.
So, actually, I'm gonna save this thought until we cover Get Through, Move Along.
All right, so we're a couple years ahead now. Move Along, I believe, is 2006.
Five.
And wow, this is exactly what we've been talking about this whole time with the highs of the highs. Like, you got Dirty Little Secret. You got Move Along. It Ends Tonight. There's one more on here that I'm forgetting.
Can we start with the classic boy band album cover?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so douchey. White background with their letters in big, bold print, and them guys just kind of standing there cross-armed. That would be
if you said, hey, ChatGPT, can you give me a mid-2000s rock boy band album cover?
all the players are, like, early 20s, pop rock band. Give them, like, red hair or something. I don't know. Yeah, that's exactly what this would pop out. It's nothing special, but it is a hilarious, like, it just so, like, industry kind of corny bullshit. Anyways,
can I read I took two reviews from this website, two different perspectives on this album.
Okay.
One I tend to agree with, one I think is a terrible take, but the first one, 80 out of 100, I would call this a peak LimeWire album. This album is responsible for destroying my computer 3 times, but it was fun enough to be worth it. It also has multiple songs that were used for like every Bionicle commercial. Do you remember those commercials?
Yep.
There'd be the Bionicles going and doing some heroic stuff.
Move along. Yeah.
And then he finishes it with, this isn't perfect, but it still holds a ton of nostalgia for me, and I still throw some of these songs on. That said, the album's pretty front-loaded overall. Sometimes it feels refreshing to go back through albums from your childhood and just enjoy them. That was a great review. I tend to agree with a lot of what he's saying there.
100%.
The review that I disagree with, 36 out of 100. I don't know where you get 36, like... specifically, Tool. He goes, this fucking sucked. Sounds like all the worst qualities of a great band like Jimmy Eat World distilled in the most palatable.
Stop. Stop. A great band like Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah.
This is satire. This isn't even a real review. This is satire.
Distilled in the most palatable version possible. So I thought both of those made me laugh.
That was worth mentioning. What a comment. Never in a million years have I put Jimmy World and great in the same sentence.
And not like a not like a real band, like Bowling for Soup. It's like, what?
Oh, man. Out of nowhere. That's crazy. Man, did you get that off the Genius? Is that where you got that?
No, no. Oh. It was it's a different site where you review albums.
I was going to say, you've got some real gems over the last few weeks from these websites between Dire Straits and now this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. But, yeah, this is absolutely the nostalgia that stabs me right in the heart and brings me back to being 9 years old and fucking, I don't know, playing putt-putt or something. This album rocks.
Yes.
Top to bottom, give it a listen for sure. As I was listening it, I was tempted to give it a 10 out of 10. I don't know if I'm quite there, but I'm like 9.5.
I think an 8 or a 9 is fair. I don't think there's any misses on this album.
Yeah, that's the thing. So this is such a weird comparison, but I was thinking about this in comparison with like 1X and like, all right, is this like the same thing as 1X where I just fucking love every song? Probably not, but it's close.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, the hits are definitely there.
That's what I'm saying. Like the hits are so strong and there's a lot of good deep cuts too.
Yeah,
it doesn't have that like quality to put it over the edge. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like all the songs are good, but I still think it's not
a 10 out of 10. No, it just doesn't quite get there. It's close. It's really close.
No, I think, yeah, there's some sneaky underrated tracks on here too that are really good. Like Stab My Back.
100%. The first 6, 7, 8 tracks are awesome. All of them. Like love, love, love. Anyways, I guess that's a lot to say. Let's just get into it. Opening the album with Dirty Little Secret is fucking awesome.
All-time opener.
All-time opener. I mean, instant classic. You hear the riff, and within 5 seconds, you know the track.
Yep.
Slightly crunchy up-tempo rhythm guitar with the occasional, like, three-note little lick on top from lead guitar. Very, like, authentic, kind of crying, like, powerful vocals. Belting it out as we go into the chorus, and then the background vocalists add in and, like, echo him, and it's, like, it gives it that very like live amphitheater like sing along quality. The bridge is incredible here. I love this track.
Yeah, and it's funny lyrically. Tyson's getting a little bit better. Where he was saying at the time he was in a happy relationship and he had to like manifest something that wasn't there, and that's where he got inspiration for the song from. You know, not from like just breaking up with a girl, but he had to like manifest it on his own.
He had to dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, he's growing as an artist.
Yeah.
You know what else I wanted to point out is whoever had the idea in the music video for people to hold up the flashcards with their secrets.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't watch the video.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great
music
video.
Okay, I'll check
that
out for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like most of the time you don't even see their face. They're just standing there and then they hold up a flashcard like, you know, I haven't come out to my parents yet or like something like that. And
that's really fucking cool.
And then it'll cut to the band. And it's a really cool idea for a music video.
Fuck yeah. That's sick. I'm going to check that out for sure. Man, I miss the music videos. Bring back MTV.
But yeah, I mean, this is an all-time catchy chorus. You know the words. It gets stuck in your head. If you listen to it, it'll get stuck in your head later that day. So it's a great song.
And it's got a little bit of that, where are you? It's got a little bit of that to it.
Yeah. You'll be just another regret.
Yeah. Oh, it's so catchy. Love it. All right. Can't be there forever. So next track, Stab My Back. Same thing. Love it.
I think this is really underrated.
Oh, wildly underrated. And it's interesting, too, because like, you got so much of the same thing on the first album, whereas this feels a bit like post-grunge, early 2000s, just solid rock.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's got this like jangly, stuttery riff in the open, but then you get these sweet and powerful lines through the verses and crunching it up into the chorus. Like another one that I want to see live so bad, like great deep cut.
Yeah, definitely. This is like, this style for them is like, this is the apex. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to get any better than this.
100%.
And they're hitting the nail on the head with every track on this.
No, 100%.
And lyrically, it's subject matter about, you know, being cheated on in a relationship. But even the songwriting's a little bit better here where he's singing, now we're broken on the floor. She just wants me to share her. It hasn't been this way before. She just wants me to dare her. Yeah, this is, I think, one of the most underrated tracks they have.
One of those, like, I think we're going to talk about Taylor Swift after this. It's a very Taylor thing to be like, it's the line, boys only want love if it's torture. Yeah, it's the same thing here. That's what I was looking for. Anyways.
That's funny.
Alrighty. Next one. Another big, big single off this album. Instant classic, Move Along. Classic pop rock anthem. Quick, choppy, kind of mid-high tune chords. Drums, finally, again, like I'm seeing progress in the drums. They sound awesome here. Powerful, like vocals, really working through tones, working through like up and down in his range. He hits this like line at the end that is so sick. I'm thinking of a different song, but still, like, he starts ripping at the end, just like letting it all hang out. Very gritty, grimy thing. I love this one, man.
Dude, the Bionicles commercials that had this song in the backdrop were legendary. Like, it would just cut to the Bionicles, like, jumping in the air and landing and just started fighting.
Oh, so cool. Electric.
I would have never had Bionicles if it wasn't for this
song.
We
should watch some after this.
I think I had it. They did, like, video games, TV.
They had a TV, like, maybe even a movie.
Yeah, like, the action figures, which were essentially just, like, Legos.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
Oh, man, what a legendary combination from the mid 2000s.
Sit down with a bowl of tricks, maybe flip on like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, just get right into one of these. Oh man,
yeah. So you know what's funny about this song is this song, Move Along, and It Ends Tonight were the last two songs they wrote for the album.
What?
Yeah. So it's like they really struck gold there at the end. Not that.
So we talked about this last time, where it's like how many artists get this like gold mine right before the album comes out. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, this, like, having those two songs makes the album go from just like an all right album to like a great album.
Yeah. Yeah. Without, yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. Nail on the head there. All right. Same thing. We got to move along at some point here. So, you like that? next one, another classic. It Ends Tonight. It's a ballad. It's their first true ballad. He is so masterful on the mic here from the very first light line to the very end. He just drips all the sadness and upset and like bitterness all out there for you. And it's so prominent too, because you just hear that simple boom, 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 boom. And like he shines right through that, man. It's so fucking cool. And then as it goes along, like, you get heavy, buzzy chords and sweet strings kind of mixed in. The bridge here, again, fantastic bridge. Very, very, very sing-along. Even as sad as it is, very sing-along. Like, I love it.
Yeah, the vocal work is next level. Like, he gets so much emotion, and he mixes up his emotions throughout the bridge and the chorus. And
it's the strain you hear at the end of
lines. Exactly. And even the songwriting, the walls start breathing, my mind's unweaving, maybe it's best you leave me alone, a weight is lifted on this eating, I give the final blow. And like just the amount of different inflections that he has in that stanza.
And as he goes through those lines in particular, that's where the strings really pick up. You hear them like getting louder and louder, and just like ripping your heart out, man. It's a fantastic spot for that.
Yeah, so... funny story on this song. I, for the longest time, I was like, oh, yeah, it's about a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, like, who wouldn't think that?
Yeah, so, funny story. It was actually about this shithead guy that was touring with the band at the time. There's this guy who was significantly older than us at the time. He acts like an old man, going to bed early, really being a bum around Ty, because Ty's a night owl. He wanted to stay up. He wanted to hang out. He got frustrated and fed up with this guy bringing things down, so he wrote this song about this guy.
A message to you in particular.
It's just so funny. Like, this is like...
it's such a sad breakup song.
100%.
It's also a wild thing to give to another dude that you're touring with.
Right. And it's just about some guy that was bugging him on tour.
Oh, that's cool.
Either way, great ballad, great song.
Great ballad. All right, next one, Change Your Mind. This is, of the next, like, of the first 7-8 tracks, this is probably the one I like the least, and I still like it a lot.
Same.
High energy, good vibes, love song. Very pop-punk sounding again. It feels a bit Fall Out Boy derivative to me. I'll leave it at that. Again, drums showing their work here, like, doing great work on the drums. Vocals in a higher level throughout. Just a good up-tempo rocker. I like this one.
Yeah, lyrically a little bit different, where it's about helping someone that's going through a tough time get through it. So it's cool to see them write about something else other than relationships, and I like this one. It's upbeat, solid, lighter rock.
Yeah, it's just this is kind of almost mindless in a way. Like, you just pop this on and enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. All right, next one. I think this is another. This could have easily been another single off this album, Night Drive. high energy, very just early 2000s rock. Not pop rock, not pop punk, just solid 2000s rock. Getting like very Buckcherry, Jet, Lit vibes off this one. Mixed heavy chords and really nice work on the lead guitar with like little licks and solos he does throughout. Like, you don't see a lot of the soloing throughout their catalog, but here they get a good chunk of it, and it's pretty good. I mean, it's not like, it's no Van Halen, but like, it's nice to have it. The chorus is so fucking catchy. Like, I just sing this over and over and over again, man. Like, and then you get these background vocalists going like over the, like, as he goes into the chorus, he does this fight, 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 and then night, night, night. And you hear the background vocalist like adding on top of that. Like, it's such a good mix, man. This is an awesome song.
Yeah, another great mix. Another song about a relationship ending. Oh, this one's a little bit different, you know, driving away, never looking back. It's funny they have the line, "You wreck my life, so I'm going to have to drive all night." Like, back when gas was affordable. When people could afford to drive all night.
Yeah, dude. I pull up to, we got like a Costco membership, and it's crazy to pull up to Costco and you still have to pay $3.40 for gas. This is such a dumb side tangent, but like, ugh, kill me.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, great track there. Next one's pretty good too. 11:11 p.m. I hate this is such a dumb
cheesy
reference.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Cheesy.
This is an all-time, like, when I think of mid 2000s boy bands rock, this song.
Oh, this is absolutely the song that got you laid in like 2007 for sure. Anyways, true rock song here. Screechy notes mixed in with like classic All-American Rejects sounds. Chorus goes hard as fuck here. Even the verses feels like stretched, strained, angry. It's just the sound that I love from these guys. And so for that, great track.
Yeah. Does it throw our dreams away? Don't waste this chance with your smile. It's the last time we can save our relationship. It's very, very mid-2000s and everything about it. But it's a good track.
Alrighty. Next one, Dance Inside. This is another kind of cheesy reference to me, like, it feels very like Dancing in the Moonlight in a way, like just lyrically, but.
You know what this reminded me of sound-wise is a little bit of Metro Station, One Hit Wonder, Shake It.
I'm not familiar.
Shake it. You'd recognize it.
Could you give me a couple more lines?
That's it.
That's it?
And then it also reminded me a little bit of 303.
No, let's take that back. Please don't say that. The 303 would be an interesting study. I think I know like one or two songs, but from what I've heard, not a good band.
Funny enough, I think I bought one of their album, like physical albums back in the day, Streets of Gold. They actually have maybe like 15 to 20 good songs, but they also have some of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life.
It feels like a bit like what we talked about with Linkin Park, where like Limp Bizkit is like the unevolved version of Linkin Park. 303 feels like the unevolved version of Hollywood Undead.
No, because 303 is all about like, well, I almost walked myself into a trap there.
I've revealed my trap card.
I was going to say 303 is all about like girls and partying. But I think Hollywood and Dead's.
I'll draw a pot of green.
That might have been Hollywood and Dead's like first album, but I think they've evolved quite a bit from that.
Yeah.
But 303 is very, very.
Roller coaster, yeah.
Talk about like they had like the album that had a couple hits for the time, and then the times like instantly like pass. You know what I mean? Where it's like they put out that sound, and then a year later, everyone's like, "This is kind of trash."
Fuck these guys. Yeah. They had their moment. All right, where the fuck are we? Top of the World?
No, Dance Inside.
Dance Inside still? Oh man, softer, sweeter love song here. Like it has heavy, crunchy chords. But then they back off in sections and kind of, like, let the lead guitar move in. But then the singer gets his like, it's this weird kind of ballad thing that's, like, heavy and soft and heavy and soft. Like, it's just, it's on and off thing. But I do like it. Very simple drum pattern here, though. Tyson really working his high range on the mic. And, like, he's got this desperate, pleading sound to it that's very, like, sweet and, like, works well for this track. I think there's a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, songwriting's a little bit better. They wrote this after meeting a pretty girl on the road one night. Classic rock band song.
Yep. Nothing special there. All right, so anyways, what I was saying was Top of the World, next one. Yeah, this lead guitar kicks ass. Whatever they did here, I don't know like where they came up with this, but I love that little Spanish guitar. like open, and then they get right into that heavy, like thick, fast fucking like rocker. Just rips the cover off the song, dude. Gritty, angry vocals, loud, like pounding drums. It's just top to bottom, like full energy, like balls to the wall stuff here. And they mix in that little Spanish lick again, like as they get in and out of choruses and like in the bridge. Like I love this song.
Yeah, and this is just goes back to what we said for this album, when they have that upbeat rock that meshes super well with Tyson's voice, and like they get away from it later, but this is it. Like this is a sound where whatever they're, it doesn't even matter what they're singing about, it sounds good.
Yeah, 100%.
And like, great. And even for this song, like they're just singing about greedy people being greedy, which is like, I don't know. It's a little bit cheesy, but it sounds good.
It reminds me a little bit of what you talked about with the Fray, where it's like they don't have other material, so now they're just like pulling on strings to find something.
Yeah. That's maybe a good way of looking at it, where it's like, did you really have to write a song about people being greedy?
Yeah, it's kind of a nothing burger lyrically, but God, this sounds great.
Yeah, totally agreed.
All right, next one. Another one that I fucking love, Straight Jacket Feeling. And this is their very, like, I would say second true slow acoustic ballad. Strings and drums kind of fill out the track with these sweet but, like, longingful vocals. Musically, it doesn't really get much crazier than that. There's not much to it musically, but I just think the vocals are awesome on this track. And I like the way the strings, like, build this ballad. Like, my note here is I cannot get enough of this album. Like, just, it's a great spot for this song, too. Like, if you're going to do this, putting it at 10 is a perfect spot for it.
Yeah. Love it. I don't like this one as much as you, but I do agree that he does great vocal work. This is another one about the aftermath of a toxic relationship. It might be one of my least favorites on the album, but it's still good.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Not going to argue. Next one. And again, like, I don't not like this song. I just think this is probably my least favorite song on the album. I'm Waiting. Up-tempo pop rocker. Fairly generic pop-punk sound here. Still brings good energy. I like the sound. I like the energy. It's just not special. It's not inspiring.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. Another song about a relationship. And yeah, I'm with you where this and the last song maybe are not... They're probably my two least favorite on the album.
Well, so let's talk about the last song. Can't Take It. Again, they're doing this thing now where the last track on the album is wildly different than everything else. You'll see it on the next album, too. And so you get, like, a piano and strings kind of, like, symphony thing here. And then the piano, like, will jump in, replace the strings, then they come together. And it's a really cool sound if you're into that kind of music. And I think Tyson does great work on the mic here. Again, you really hear that emotion, like, coming out from the mic. It's bitter. It's regretful. Sad. Like, if, again, perfect place for it on the album. Replay value? But I think it's perfectly placed. And I think if you're going to do this, great place to do it. Good song.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add there other than great vocal work, another song about a relationship ending. But like you said, have it at the end. It works. And yeah, all in all, a great album. So the point I almost brought up at the end of the last album is, are you familiar with the When We Were Young tour?
No.
So basically they get a bunch of groups from like the mid 2000s, anywhere from 2000 to 2010, 2015 or whatever, that were popular. And they have them come like Fall Out Boy's like the headliner. And they're still popular. But
yeah, I get the point. Yeah.
So they have the All-American Rejects listed on the tour list for later this year. And they're only performing one album. Do you want to guess what album they're having them perform?
Let me take a look real quick. I will guess Kids in the Street.
No. They're having them do the first album.
Really?
Which is like, why would you not do the album that has like all five of your biggest hits?
Yeah.
Or four out of five of your biggest hits.
That feels a bit hipstery to me, where it's like, oh, that's too obvious. We need to do the original.
I don't know, but
it's not like you have a big enough fan base to be like, yeah, we're going to do the original. Everybody will know all the words.
Yeah, right. Whoever made that decision, like, needs to be fired.
It's a very questionable decision, for sure.
Dude. There's one hit off that album compared to four mega hits.
So they're playing that album front to back?
That's what they made it seem like. Because they listed out the bands and then, like, the name of the album that they were performing.
Okay, I guess. Anybody else I would know? Or did you, like, see the full list?
Yeah, there's a lot of people you'd know.
Yeah.
I'll pull it up here.
Hold on. Let me take a few guesses here. Let me say Trapped. Early 2000s, but like not huge. Maybe like Snow Patrol.
Okay, so I just pulled it up here. Those are some good guesses. I'll just read off a couple. So the two headliners, Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance.
Oh yeah, yep.
And then after that, next to Day to Remember, they're doing the album Homesick, and then Jimmy Eat World, Bleed American. And then we've got
okay, but before you move on, like Bleed American is their biggest album.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Simple Plan, No Pads, No Helmets, Just Balls, classic album.
Classic.
Pierce the Veil, Collide with the Sky, The Used, In Love and Death, Newfound Glory, Sticks and Stones, Mayday Parade, A Lesson in Romantics.
This is an interesting like group of artists.
Silverstein, okay. Discovering the Waterfront. I like Silverstein.
Not familiar, but okay.
Let's see. Yeah, I don't see. Oh, they do have 303 doing Want. That's the album with the Don't Trust Me.
Yeah, that like blue and black cover.
Yeah. Yeah, no Snow Patrol.
Yeah, I guess like those are all pretty heavy bands. So, yeah. But I guess Trapped was a pretty good guess.
But yeah, the fact that they're having the All American Rejects do the self-titled album, it's just.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right, so that brings us along to, like, 2008, I want to say, When the World Comes Down. So you're coming off the highs of the highs, right? And like we've said a million times already, I like this album a lot. There's just some intangible thing that I can't put my finger on here still, that it just doesn't have all the hits. It has a couple hits, doesn't have the same, like gravitas about it.
Agreed, but I still like this album, start to finish.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue there. I think towards the end, maybe. I mean, let me scroll back through my notes here. I think towards the end, maybe I lost it a little bit, but I guess we'll just talk through it and see what happens. But I do, the few times I listened to this album, enjoyed it every time, no doubt.
Yes.
And it sounds a little bit like we talked about them maturing on the last album. They've matured even a little bit more going into this album. Not to say that the sound has changed a ton, but like the vocal work, again, is really, really good. And like the drums are fully here now, like you have a drummer actually. It's the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, definitely.
So with that, it opens up with I Wanna. Strange opener. Cause like, you know, I've talked about it so many times where I want the opener to be energetic and like kind of punch you in the face a little bit, especially with rock bands. The chorus here doesn't really get out of that like mid level that they spend in the verses. So, I don't know, it's a weird kind of like up-tempo pop rock thing. It's almost, and I hear a little bit more of this on the next album too, it's almost a little bit Strokes-y, where like, it never really delivers that punch that you think it's going to. It just kind of stays in its level. But it's cool still, like the chorus is very catchy. It's got a lot of keyboard mixed in with these low chunky chords and like kind of a heavy drum pattern. But yeah, I don't know, as an opener, I don't know.
Yeah, it is hard to repeat the same phrase over and over and over again and have it be catchy.
I wanna.
He does say, I wanna half a million times.
Oh.
But I do, the song is kind of catchy. I like it. I don't love it. I would agree with you. It's probably not the best opener for this album.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, again, if you want to open, maybe. I'll mention it when we get there. But there's other tracks I'd rather have open this album.
Yeah.
Still, like, one of the better songs on this album, I would say. Probably top third. Anyways, not the point. Good track, weird open. Next one, Falling Apart. Another strange track. Why does this sound like the Full House, like, theme song?
I don't see that at all.
I got very much, like, Mulberry Street vibes from this track. 21 Pilots song. I don't know. It's got this like bumpy, kind of poppy thing to it with simple intermittent chords and a lot of strings mixed in, a lot of background harmonizing on the mic. And, you know, the vocals are, they don't really do a ton. Like, they sound good. It just doesn't stretch. But it's got a very, like, homey, like, good vibes, kind of like just strutting through the neighborhood with your kids and the dog, like, good vibe kind of thing. It's weird for them.
Yeah, I do kind of like the sound, even though it's different. Like, I think this is one instance where it works, where they do something like kind of out there.
Yeah. Again, I feel the same way about this song that I feel about Mulberry Street. It's weird. It's different. They sound similar. I still kind of like it.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And yeah, this song is about just being like a kind of a slave to love. Like, wherever you go, I'm going to follow you, even if it's, you know, doesn't work out.
Right, right.
And then, yeah, we get to the third track, which is, I think this is another one where it should have been a hit, but I don't think it was. It was Damn Girl.
Yeah, I don't think this hit either. And it really didn't do much for me. Like, it sounds fine, but it's not, again, feels fairly generic to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't a huge fan. Like, it's slow, heavy, like, kind of bumpy chords here. You get it's a kind of a ballady thing. You get these sweeter vocals, but then it picks up hard into the chorus. I don't know, man. Like, yes, this probably at 3 in the album, it makes sense that this would be one that they would maybe push a little. It just doesn't get there, and I wasn't super inspired by this song.
Oh, this is one of my favorite All American Reject songs.
Gotcha.
For some reason, the chorus is just super catchy to me. I love that. This was one that I had remembered liking a lot back in the day, like 10, 15 years ago. And then, like, listening to it again, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about this. Like, this was a song I had purchased on, like, iTunes back in the day, you know?
Oh, man, song by song. What a time.
And the song, you know, just explores Ty's conflicted feelings about a girl who cheats on him. But, yeah, this is one of my favorite AAR songs.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. I don't know. Next one is, oh, It Gives You Hell. All right, so the hit off this album, by far. Another classic. As soon as you hear the little piano like bumping in the beginning, immediately you know it. I guess it's more keyboard than it is piano too. But regardless, the simple like clicky drums and a very conversational feel to the verses, where it just feels like he's talking to somebody. But it's got this like grittiness to it, this like very tense, but all like subtle tense grittiness to it. And then when he gets to the chorus, he's just like, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck you. And like another one where he just shows off on the mic 1,000,000%. And I love what they do where they like build that simple sound into a very like catchy classic kind of like chorus for like mid 2000s rock, even though this is a little bit later, but you get the point. You know, it's got great sing along quality, great replay value, great track.
Yeah. This for sure is one where if it comes on at, you know, if you're drinking or whatever, and this song comes on, everyone's singing along to the chorus. It's a fun time. Couple of fun facts about this song. First one, they recorded this at George Lucas's Skywalker Ranch Studios in California.
What?
So that's kind of fun. And then two, the band said they wanted like the part where they're all singing gives you like when you see my face, hope it gives you hell in the background.
Yeah.
They wanted it to sound like a bunch of drunk assholes. So they all slammed a bunch of beers and then recorded this for like the background vocals.
That's awesome.
And it does give you that like sing along, like campfire kind of sound.
100%. Like, I can see the music video right now. It's a dark night. They're sitting on a beach by the lake and just kind of like jangling along. They all got guitars in their hand. They're all playing the guitars. And then all of a sudden, like, you pan away in the background and the band's just like rocking out in like a grassy area in that same beach.
Yeah.
I can see it now.
And funny enough, too, this is also similar to It Ends Tonight. It was about a guy. They said lyrically, it was about this asshole. It's a dude who will never know it's about him. Just, I guess, someone that was being a jerk. And it's funny, like, they're two of their biggest hits where you're like, oh, like, you would think it's about, like, someone that he had dated.
Yeah, breakup, right.
Yeah, and that's not the case.
Well, hey, you know what? At least they're getting, like, inspired lyrics on some of these, you know? Like, there's no bullshit here. It's cool.
Oh, and I got one more. This one's a good one. This was surprisingly the first song with Hell in its title to reach the top 10 of the Hot 100. It was preceded by 4 heavenly named number one singles. So, singles with Heaven in the name, we have the Bee Gees' Too Much Heaven, 1979. 1985, Bryan Adams' Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
1987, Belinda Carlisle, Heaven is a Place on Earth.
That's not even real. That's a fake person. Belinda Carlisle?
You know the song, though.
No.
Oh, if I played it,
give me a couple
it.
Lines. I'm fucking with you, relax.
And then 2005, Carrie Underwood, Inside Your Heaven.
Okay, yeah.
But it's funny that there's no other songs with
Yeah,
Hell.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's like Ozzy Osbourne or I don't know,
AC/DC.
Yeah, there's got to be songs that fall into this category that it's like, whoa.
Wonder Hell's Bells didn't make it.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Unless they discounted it because it was plural, but I doubt it.
Nah, probably not. Maybe, I don't know.
Highway to Hell?
Highway to, oh my God. Yeah. What are we talking about? That's wild. Anyways.
Maybe the Hot 100 has like different criteria or something.
Well, maybe this, we've talked about this before, but like maybe it's a thing too, or I don't know if that was a thing you could say on the radio. And so it simply didn't get played because you couldn't say that on the radio.
Yeah, that's because that would have been a good 30 years prior to this.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it was, but maybe it wasn't, so that's part of it. But regardless, pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Mona Lisa, parentheses, When the World Comes Down. Again, talk about campfire setting, like very acoustic campfire song here. No drums. It's all tambourines and maracas making up the percussion. You get piano that like comes in out of nowhere, kind of around the choruses and just adds little bits. Otherwise, fairly simple track. I think the vocals are nice here, not perfect, nice. It feels a little early on the record for this track, but regardless, it's a fine song.
I think it's good. I like his vocals has like this almost like I don't care type attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still a little bit catchy. The lyric for the album name, When the World Comes Down, comes from the song.
You're right, right, exactly. Title track, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this song, along with the rest of the album, was recorded at Barefoot Studios in Hollywood, which was the home base for producer Eric Valentine, who helped with Queens of the Stone Age and Smash Mouth.
What a confluence. Well, I don't know. Like, it's funny putting Queens of the Stone Age in there because we think of them, or at least I think of them, as a very heavy rock band. But you do have to kind of like put them in the context of like it's pop rock that's tuned down seven notches. A lot of it. That's funny.
Yeah.
Smash Mouth, All American Rejects, and Queens of the Stone Age.
I also found, I'll make us do them on the pod one day. But I found this band from my Discover Weekly, and I ended up listening to like their entire like first album. I was like, this album kicks ass. It sounds just like Queens of the Stone Age. And then I do a quick Google search, and it was like
That's Stone Temple Pilots.
It was like this album produced by Josh Holm.
Oh, okay,
I was like, okay,
caught.
It was so funny though. I was like, man, like. How'd they get this to sound so Queensy?
Bro, the fucking tentacles those guys got and so much other like nonsense is hilarious. Oh, that's cool. What was the name of that band?
QRX.
QRX. Huh. Let's check them out.
Or no, let me make sure I got this right. I think it's CRX.
CRX?
CRX.
CRX. All right. Yeah, that's cool. Check them out for sure. All righty. Next one. Breaking. Good, not great here. Kind of an up-tempo, crashy, but also sweet sound thing to it. I don't know. Like, it feels like they took a pop-punk song and, like, sweetened it up a lot. Fast drums, rhythm guitar, like, moving along, slightly tuned-up lead, like, churning over it. A lot of choral singing with the band here, and even the you know, Tyson on the lead gets very sweet with it. Great energy. I just, like, this song was so close to being a hit. It just needs a little bit of a kick in the chorus.
Yeah.
If they reached up to that next level, great track. Otherwise, good track.
Yeah, I like this one. I had a question for you. Going through this album, like, the lyrics maybe aren't the best, but I'm just a sucker for the sound. Do you think that we're, like, victims of the time period and, like, growing up around this time, and that's why maybe it sounds a little bit better to us?
No, I've talked about this. I think we talked about it a good chunk on Kesha, where it's very, like, it's junk food. It doesn't have any substance to it, but it's just something you could pop on, and you're like, it brings, yeah. Part of what you said is true. It has the nostalgia factor, but it's also just a sound we enjoy.
True.
So, like, you know, this is one of those things where, like, you could put a lot of different lyrics in here, and it is what it is, because I just love the sound. You know, it's not, like, super serious, but, like, not everything's supposed to be. I don't know, like, I can enjoy it regardless of the I guess, quality to it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But yeah, this was another good, catchy song. I like this one.
Yeah, that's cool. Next one, Another Heart Calls. I do like that they got the like duetting with female vocalists on here. So they get Catherine and Allison Pierce of the Pierces. Never heard of them, but that's who they are.
Nope.
But it is cool that like Tyson's doing this duet thing with them. It's low, slow, kind of heavy music. Tuned down acoustic, like bumping out notes in time with a piano and simple drums all together. Builds it up into a full kind of rock sound as they go into the chorus and then back and forth and, you know, up and down. It's a good duet. Not a great track, but a good duet.
Yeah, and it's something different that kind of works.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I almost feel like there's other songs. Like, It Ends Tonight might be an interesting duet.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do, you could definitely do that.
There's other songs in their catalog where I'm like, well, we're doing this now, but you could have tried something else. Anyways, cool track regardless.
I had another note here. I don't quite think this holds up, but when I was listening to this album, I had the note, is All American Rejects the G-rated version of Bring Me the Horizon?
Whoa.
I don't think
expand on that thought.
I don't think it holds up. I don't know. I think something about just listening to this album, I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, I don't draw a parallel there. I did see a hilarious TikTok, though, the other day. It was two girls in a crowd at a concert, and the one girl's like, when's she going to play Fearless? And then it flashes to the other girl. She goes, we're at a Bring Me the Horizon concert. And then it flashes to the stage, and there's fire coming up all over the stage.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. Anyways.
That's a great contrast. Of
oh,
Taylor,
it's a hilarious,
Bring Me the Horizon.
It's a hilarious joke. Good work, boys. All right. Next one. Real World. Fast, loud, belting rocker. Very mid-2000s rock here again. Up-tempo churning guitars with this like wobbly, weird keyboard lick coming in. You get these like shuffly marching drums all the way through. And then, you know, just great energy choruses, verses, whatever. Bridge breaks it down to this very like softer piano vocals kind of mellowed out thing. And then it comes back together massively in this last chorus, man. A great track here.
Yeah, the sound is great. Even if the lyrics are kind of average and maybe a little bit cheesy. Fun fact on this one, a demo version of the song appeared in the soundtrack for Madden 09.
Madden 09. That is, I think
who would be on the cover?
Brett Favre?
I think this
is the cartoon one with the big heads.
No. Brett Favre wasn't cartoony.
Oh, okay. Well, one of those. It's like 08, 09, 10. One of those is the one where they get the cartoon heads as like the characters. You know what I'm talking about?
I think that was a couple years later.
Ah, whatever. Close enough.
It was also featured in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Who's seen that? Like, dude, what a fall off, man. Shia LaBeouf was the key to that, or the straw that stirred, well, I think I might even be taking this take back as I'm saying it, because really Megan Fox was the straw that stirred that drink, but.
Both of them.
Yeah, man. When they got rid of Megan Fox and they went to that other Victoria's Secret model, and then they got rid of Shia LaBeouf and they went to Mark Wahlberg, it was like, ah, fuck this.
Dude, don't people get tired of seeing Mark Wahlberg and like The Rock do the same thing in the 18th movie of the year? Like, they only make the same movies.
I think The Rock has like become a little bit self-aware about this because now he's doing like an A24 movie.
Yeah.
He's working on something. I don't think Mark Wahlberg is self-aware at all. Or he is self-aware and he's just like, you know what? This is what I do. This is what I do.
Yeah, he's like, check's good. $20 million. Yep, I'll do it.
Boston, crime, action movie, bang. Yeah, 100%.
Most of them aren't even good.
You know what I rewatched the other day? The Other Guys, man. He's so good.
Oh,
he is good in that movie.
He is good in that one. Yeah. Will Ferrell's the GOAT,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
for
sure.
He's
awesome. Anyways. But Real World, really cool track. Absolutely check this one out. Next one, Back to Me. Piano ballad here. But then you get these like mid-tempo jazzy drums. Like it's got a jazzy rock feel to it. I don't know quite how to put that. Because you get the piano, and the piano's a bit jazzy as well, but then you got these buzzy, like, sliding guitar and that whiny, like, pop-punk vocal to it, very Tom DeLonge thing. And the vocals really never, like, stray out of that mid-range, which is also very jazz. Like, it doesn't rise too much like a typical rock song. And I don't know. This is a cool – it's a weird, like, track kind of relative to some of the other stuff, but I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was good, solid AAR.
I wholly disagree. Like, yes, it's good, solid, but, like, not AAR, in my opinion.
Well,
anyways.
Yeah, maybe more lyrically. I believe I believe you'll find your way back to me, you know?
Yeah, classic.
I thought I heard the flute on this, too.
Well, I'd have to go back and check that out. I don't know if I heard that.
It might have just been some of the other jazz elements that
sounded
a little bit like the flute.
100%. That's funny, though. Just the fucking boys running back the same old story. Oh, man. You think, like, a lot of the writing credits I saw were both Nick and Tyson. You think they just sit down, they're like, all right, how can we rework this song into a completely another song?
Bro, that, dude, I was thinking that.
It's like Mad Libs almost.
Yeah, I was thinking that, who do we do, within the last couple of weeks, we did someone else where it was like the same type of song for the last.
I mean, we did Vance Joy.
Yes, Vance Joy, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing where he's like, huh, like, he puts into the chat GPT, like, Write me eight stanzas about feeling lonely because my girl left or something, and like, oh, now write it again. You know?
But sadder.
Yeah.
Now even sadder.
Now add some harmonica.
Oh, man, that's cool. All righty. Next one, Believe. Very, very stereotypical 2000s pop rock song. Like, the most stereotypical. Sorry, I got distracted. Somebody was walking outside. Up-tempo, kind of bumpy chords, and just a very, like, very AAR sound. A lot of background echoing vocals. It's fine. Nothing special.
Yeah, I don't like it as much as the others. Lyrically cheesy. Like, yeah, man, death is scary. That's what they're writing about.
And, again, pulling strings.
That's about it. Yeah. For the next song, The Wind Blows, I've got a album cover for the single. I want to show it to you. And maybe you can describe it for the listeners.
Oh, this is interesting. All right, so imagine like the TV show Lost, but you gave them instruments,
nicer shirts,
but they also still look homeless. You've got a drum kit in the ocean, literally in the ocean. Guys in full attire, like jeans and shoes, getting washed up onto the shore. This is the douchiest album cover of all time.
So cheesy.
Yeah, that's, again, very all-American GPT of them. what a look. Regardless, The Wind Blows. I like it. It's just, like, at this point, I'm kind of, I don't need this. I want more of the cheeseburger, man. Like, it's a slowed-down breakup song. Poppy drums and this odd keyboard mixed in. You get these crying, upset vocals, like calling out to the woman he loves. It's very, very like biting, and like he does a good job on the track. It's just not something I was looking for here.
Yeah, fun fact on this one, they originally wrote this song for Gwen Stefani.
And they were writing songs for Gwen Stefani?
Well, she turned it down, so I guess not.
Yeah. Thanks, boys, but no.
But yeah, so this ended up making the cut of the album, and the band really liked this one. This is one of their favorites.
Okay,
it's decent. I like a lot of the earlier ones better.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gwen Stefani, did you see she had kind of a moment at Coachella last weekend?
No, I didn't see that.
So she's doing like her No Doubt thing. She like brought the band back together, and she's got this kind of classic moment in a concert from the early 2000s where she's on stage and she's doing "I'm Just a Girl." And she slows it down and does some crowd work where she gets all the guys in the crowd to sing, "I'm just a girl." And she did it again at Coachella last weekend. It was just a cool little callback. And, like, people were going nuts about it on TikTok and whatnot. It was cool.
How long do you wait before you break something like that out? Because, like, she's been doing that forever, right?
Oh,
like,
she's been performing
the song forever.
Yeah, I guess. But it's probably been a while because, like, No Doubt broke up in the early 2000s. And then she was doing her own thing. So, like, I don't know how long it's been since she's even performed that song.
Yeah, true.
You know, I don't know, like, if they've gotten back together or whatnot, but it strikes me as it's probably been a while. Anyways, I just thought it was a cool moment. Coachella's not really something I'm interested in, but that was a cool moment.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Then there's a hidden track. I don't know why. Why bother? You're All American Rejects, not Nirvana. Relax.
Yeah, I think this track and the previous two are, like, super, like, experimental.
Very experimental. This is Sunshine. You get another strings ballad here, very akin to the last track of the last album. Bittersweet vocals. You know, again, I like what he's doing on the vocals, but the replay value is just low.
Yeah, it was decent. I'm with you. I'm not going to come back to it a ton. It does have a happier kind of vibe when talking about a relationship, so a little bit different, but
yeah,
it's all right.
It's all right. A bit of a lackluster close to this album. And so that's maybe the intangible quality I was trying to get at before we started getting into this album, is like, it just doesn't have like top to bottom staying power that Move Along had.
Yeah. I still think it's a good album.
Good album for sure. Not top to bottom staying power.
Yeah. Gives You Hell is an all time song though.
Great track. And then, we get Kids in the Street.
Yeah. This is one of the worst albums we've covered.
Yeah, I would be open to just kind of skipping around here.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, this is I said it at the top. It feels like they just took all the songs that were rejected from previous albums and tossed them on here as like a cheap way to like get an album out.
But before they did that, they sent it to production whoever was producing it, and they're like, hey, just put a bunch of different, like, make each song sound different. We don't want any song to sound similar. There needs to be no themes in this album musically that relate to one another. Just add in different effects. We don't care if they sound good.
There's a couple tracks I like on this album, though. There are a couple.
I think I might have saved one track from this album.
Yeah, there's a couple for sure. So, like, I'll start with Beekeeper's Daughter. Oh, I like that one.
Dude, that song sucks.
No, fuck you. It's got this very cool, like, funky jazz rock thing to it that I like, and a very strummy sing-along thing. It's got that, like, wah-wah kind of, like, funk guitar to it. Horns, choppy chords, like, I don't know. And the solo. There's a great solo on this song. I like this one.
Even the way this song was written, so we'll tell you all you need to know about the song. Regarding the lyrical content of the song, Nick Wheeler told us, Ty was still coming down off the whole Gives You Hell ride, and we both moved to L.A. He got mixed in with a bad crowd and kind of thought he was on top of the world, thought he was bulletproof and all that. And the song's just about him being a player.
So yeah. I mean, again, like, it's a Big Mac, you know? This is the Big Mac. It has no content to it that I'm enjoying, but I very much like the music on this one.
Yeah, see, I don't like the content, and I don't like the music.
Gotcha. All right, well, you know, teach their own, I guess.
Yeah.
Other ones that I thought were interesting on this album, Walk Over Me. It's a glam rock song, very struts of them. Like, it's got that, like, simple but heavy like, stomp-along quality to it. Obfuscated, buzzy keyboard that, like, very much lends itself to a live sing-along. Good, like, claps mixed with the thick drums. Like, I just think this is a really fun song, too.
Yeah, this is another one about a girl walking all over you. It's got, like, these synthy, poppy, laser kind of sounds. Just not for me.
Okay.
Go ahead. The next one, Out the Door, is one of the worst songs. It literally, like, the background noises is, like, Ty moaning.
Yeah, I my note here is I don't really get this song. It feels like they just threw a very generic rock, like, pop punk thing at the wall and let Tyson work, which is some of the criticism I made on the first album. It just doesn't sound great. Kids on the Street, lyrically, I think, is not bad. Musically, not a fan.
This is like, it's got like a video game sound where they want you to feel nostalgia, because that was the song's about. It's about, like, oh, about, you know, back then, the kids in the street, yada, yada, yada. And it just misses on the mark completely.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of this one either. It gets really bad at the end. Some of these last five or six tracks are horrible.
Affection is trash.
Dude, my note for I For You is, now they're doing indie folk? Lost me three songs ago.
You know, it's funny. I actually like that one a little bit more than some of the other ones.
Bleed Into Your Mind is this weird, like, druggy pop rock track. Queen or Gonzo I have the note here, like, Queens of the Stone Age kind of picks it up with the very last song to, like, get the people back, like, alive. This is the opposite, where, like, this is putting you to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it closes out with Drown Next to Me. It's this odd, quiet synth pop rock track that turns into this anthemic love song. It's decent energy, but man,
it's
by this point in the listen, I was just tired.
You can't go out like this.
No, like, no, this is a terrible way to end.
You make this album, you can't hang it up and call it quits. You can't throw the jersey in the rafters. Like, you need to make something else to redeem yourselves.
Well, and so you talked about it a little bit. It sounds to me like Tyson was getting a little high on his own supply.
Yeah, and I read they had some kind of disputes with the label, too, where they felt like the label was pressuring them certain ways, and I don't know.
Yeah, it just, you know, it feels like they just couldn't, like, there was a lot of bad vibes, guys, at the end of this. And, you know, you're not...
It's just, I can't imagine, though, like, they have four albums, right? They blow up on the Move Along. They couldn't have made enough money to retire from, like, right? Like,
that's an interesting question.
So I don't even think they were touring for a while, too.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Probably not retire, but live well for sure.
Maybe. I guess they were still doing physical sales back then, too.
Yeah, and don't know, radio was getting them some money, and like they had those hits that paid probably. So I don't know about that. That's interesting. But if like if each member of the band made, I don't know, $15 million over the course of their career.
Bro, no chance.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
I don't know. Like I have no, I don't even have like a baseline to go off.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of ballparking here. Like what does All American Rejects make on a tour? You know, like,
I don't know.
It's interesting, but, yeah, it fell apart and I don't want to say for better, but I would love to hear these guys come back and do like just do the sound, do the bit, do the jokes. Like,
yeah. And they release, I think like 5 or 7, 8, something like that, singles, songs since 2012. And I listened to 5 of them and they were pretty underwhelming.
Yeah, it's a tough way to go out, but here we are. You know, we did the same thing with the Fray. I guess although the Fray's fuck up lasted longer. It's funny they were both 4 albums, but the Fray
it's
really
probably just like the album deal.
Yeah, well, you said at the beginning, right? They did.
Oh yeah, they did three,
and then you know 1. So I don't know how all that worked, but maybe they signed a second record deal after the
and just called it quits.
Yeah, and they were like, you know what, fuck this. Yeah. All right, so that all being said, I don't really have much else if you want to get into concert set list, albums, and songs.
Sure.
All righty here. Why don't we do albums? I think we're probably in agreement.
Sure.
Kids in the Street, All American Rejects, When the World Comes Down, Move Along.
100%.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that's the only way it can be.
Yeah, 100%. Songs, why don't you go ahead and get started here? I'm finishing up a couple things.
Sure. So 10 to 1, I'll go Change Your Mind, Falling Apart, Damn Girl, Stab My Back, Stay, which is actually a demo from a song that they never released.
Okay.
But it's really good. It's like an acoustic kind of strummy song. And then Swing Swing, It Ends Tonight, Move Along, Dirty Little Secret, and Gives You Hell.
Yeah, I can get with that. Alrighty here. Give me like, let's cut this and give me like 20 seconds.
Okay.
Where is it? Night Drive. Seven. Top of the World. Okay. Yeah, so for 10 to 1, I'm going to go Real World, Change Your Mind, Top of the World, Stab My Back, Swing Swing, Gives You Hell, Night Drive, Dirty Little Secret, It Ends Tonight, then Move Along. Top song.
I like it, except for having Night Drive higher than Gives You Hell.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. That was the only one I struggled with here. I'm like, what do you do here? But Gives You Hell, I don't know. It's just it doesn't have that same energy that Night Drive has, man. I love the energy there. So that's all that is.
Gotcha.
All right. Concert set list.
Yeah. Let's open with Dirty Little Secret. That's one of the ones where even though it's like their mega hit,
yeah,
you hear the first couple notes and you're like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
And then for the encore, we'll do Swing Swing, It Ends Tonight, and then we'll close out with Gives You Hell, fun little sing along kind of vibe.
Hmm. I think we're doing the similar thing, just different ways here. But I'm opening with Night Drive. It's somewhere in the middle of their top 20 songs for sure, like just by numbers probably. But I think the energy gets the people going. Then I'm opening the encore with Gives You Hell because you can like just start playing that and immediately gets the people going. Second song, Swing Swing, and then closing the show with Move Along. I think Move Along has that longer extended final section to fuck around and have fun with. I think it's a great closer.
Yeah, I think Gives You Hell, too. That's one where, like, they can say all their thank yous and everything, and, like, the crowd singing Gives You Hell.
Yeah, yeah. Just let them do it and do your bits. Yeah, that's so cool. All righty. Next week, we will do
Jet.
Jet. And I'm forgetting some of the ones after that, but
Audioslave.
Audioslave, thank you. We'll also have the Taylor Swift episodes coming out. And so stick around. Good stuff coming. Follow us on socials, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok at Flip the Record. Like, review, subscribe.